Dr. B.R. Ambedkar Open University presents Education at Your Doorstep, a program of learning for everyone.
Well, listeners, we now bring you a lesson from English literature for third year students. The title of the lesson is The Second Coming, W.B. Yeats.
Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, is a much anthologized poem. That means it is a poem which many collections of poems include. The reason for its popularity may be the fact that it is a truly representative poem of W.B. Yeats. Let us briefly talk about Yeats's life before we actually study the prescribed poem and analyze it. William Butler Yeats was one of the great English poets of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. He was born in 1865 in Ireland and spent his early childhood in his maternal grandfather's house in Sligo, Ireland. Till the Yeats family moved to London when he was 8 or 9 years old, William Yeats lived in the Irish country house where he heard Irish legends, fairy tales, and stories about strange happenings. All these appear to have had a strong impact on the mind of the young poet who loved nature and had a vivid imagination. When the family returned to Dublin, Ireland in 1880, the education of Yeats continued and he studied a wide range of books, including the plays of Shakespeare. Apart from writing poems, young Yeats was also interested in drawing. One of the major influences on his life was his association with Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society, which gave great emphasis to spirituality and intuition. As founding member of a literary society, Yeats was actively involved in furthering the art and literature of Ireland. Other influences on his life and work include his involvement with first the Easter Rising in Ireland and later the Irish Civil War in 1922. In 1923, as a public recognition of his literary genius, Yeats received the Nobel Prize for Literature. During his eventful career, he moved from the world of mystery and fantasy that Irish legends had helped him to create, to concerns about old age, decay, cyclical change in history, and the inexorable events in time. Listen to the poem, The Second Coming, now. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are the words out when the vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again. But now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle, and what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. Let us look more closely at the poem now. The Second Coming is one of Yeats's more mature poems. The title of the poem seems to have come to Yeats from the prophecy made in Matthew, book 22 of the New Testament of the Bible. In the Bible, there is a reference to another coming of God to earth, a second birth of God in human form. The birth of Jesus Christ on the 25th of December was considered to be the coming of God upon earth for the first time. As in Indian mythology, however, the God who is to manifest himself in human form in the modern age is very different from earlier incarnations. The figure as described by Yeats is an antichrist, a half-man, half-beast who comes to the earth to be born again. The entire poem is based on the belief that there are cycles of history consisting of a 2,000-year period. An era of 2,000 years ends one cycle and begins a new one, which is completely opposite. Yeats shows the cycle of 2,000 years as a triangle. When one era ends, another starts. So, there are two triangles, one inverted on top of another. Within the triangles, there is a spiral or a spring which unwinds itself. The 2,000-year era is like a spiral or gyre that unwinds itself as it draws to a close. At the point where the triangle is widest, that is, at its base, lies the point of the inverted triangle or the beginning of the new era of 2,000 years. So, when one age ends, another era begins, and this movement goes on endlessly. Yeats calls the spiral a gyre or a pern, and the spiraling, unreeling movement suggests the uncontrollable passing of time. The poem begins with the lines, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer." Going straight to the action he wants to project, W.B. Yeats selects the words very carefully. "Turning and turning" suggest the spinning of the ears and the uncontrollable speed of movement as the 2,000-year cycle comes to an end. The falcon he refers to is a bird of prey, but here it is used to denote the man in the 20th century who has moved further and further away from the falconer or God who releases the bird to go and hunt prey. The falcon image is appropriate both because it suggests the cruel nature of man today and because the bird was actually hooded and trained to hunt smaller birds. The difference here is that after being released by the falconer, in this case God, the bird has gone far away from him and cannot find its way back or hear the falconer's call. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. Violence, confusion, death, and bloodshed mark the end of a cycle of 2,000 years. There seems to be a sea of blood which drowns innocence and other good qualities. Even those people who are good lack conviction, while the worst are intensely vicious and passionate. All these signs indicate to the poet that the cycle of 2,000 years is coming to an end. As a visionary poet, he says, he is shown a glimpse of what will follow. Surely some revelation is at hand, the poet says. Surely the second coming is at hand. The curtain of darkness lifts, and he gets a vision of what is to come. It is a large image, a vast image that has arisen from the Spiritus Mundi, or the original spirit of the world which creates all images. Before actually referring to the image, he indicates that what he will be describing is not pleasant. He uses the word "troubles my sight" to refer to the image. It is something which causes him uneasiness, because it is a shape with the body of a lion and the head of a man, combining human and beastly qualities. The gaze of the creature is blank and pitiless, a contrast to the kindness and the gentleness of the images of Jesus Christ. Though the beast moves to Bethlehem, the birthplace of Christ near Jerusalem, to be born, we are clearly told that it will be a very different form of God. The ugliness and physical rather than spiritual features of the sphinx-like beast are emphasized. The birds that circle above cast dark shadows as they move in spiral-like circles, troubled by the slow movement of the half-man, half-beast that slouches towards Bethlehem. The time for the birth of the creature draws near, Yeats feels. As a poet, visionary perhaps, he has had a glimpse into the future to see what rough beast its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. The entire poem, as we have seen, falls into two clear parts. The first is the 9-line stanza, which describes the uncontrollable movement of time and the state of affairs at the end of a 2,000-year cycle of history. One era ends and another begins. Wars, bloodshed, cruelty, corruption, loss of innocence, and hypocrisy mark the end of the cycle. Yeats is the poet prophet who gets the vision. Some revelation is at hand, he says at the end of the first section. The second section of 13 lines describes the revelation. It begins with the same lines that ended the first part. Surely some revelation is at hand. But the indication is clearly given that this vision does not bring glad news. It troubles the sight. When the vision of the half-man, half-beast passes and darkness falls again, the poet asks himself if what he saw was indeed a glimpse of the future. Now that 20 centuries of stony sleep are over, the sphinx-like beast appears to be moving to its birthplace. For us, the readers of Yeats's poem in India, some 80 years after it was published, the work appears even more intriguing because of its prophetic strain, the second coming. The year 2000 is drawing to a close, and the festival of Christmas, the birth of Jesus Christ, is to be celebrated soon. What meaning does Yeats's poem have in this context? Notwithstanding the enigma it presents, the second coming is a truly representative poem of Yeats. Through the symbols which he uses, the turning of gyres, the falcon, the falconer, the beast-like movement of the Antichrist, Yeats creates a world of imagination with the most economical use of words. Truly, therein lies his greatness as a modern poet. The critics of Yeats have argued that he is an intellectual poet. He draws upon the deep roots of mysticism from ancient traditions of Ireland, symbolism from France, theology and pantheism from India. He raises a mysterious spell, intense and often obscure, confusing the reader. But Yeats is not just an imitator. He feels intensely and analyzes deeply before creating his own individualized world, a blend of fantasy and reality.
The Second Coming, W.B. Yeats. That was a lesson brought to you from English Literature for Third Year Students.
Education at your doorstep. That was a program of learning for everyone. Brought to you by Dr. B.R. Ambedkar Open University. So listeners, it's bye till our next radio lesson.